This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Before we shift gears, a quick heads up about tomorrow's program. We'll be speaking with the hosts of Unprecedented, a new podcast by our colleagues here at WAMU, about the ordinary people behind some of the nation's most important First Amendment cases. The First Amendment protects freedom of religion, speech, press, assembly, and petitioning the government. But figuring out exactly what counts as speech has often been left to the Supreme Court. What questions do you have about the history or the future of free speech? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. Also, we'd love to know if your First Amendment rights have ever been violated. What happened? How did you deal with it? Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. 1A1A, or send us an audio file with our app, 1A Vox Pop. We'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Hip-hop has been around for nearly 50 years. It's been written about and studied in colleges. There's a permanent exhibit dedicated to it at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. But as comprehensive as the study of this genre has become, some hip-hop historians have not had much to say about women. We know about Roxanne Shanté. Netflix did a biopic on her in 2017. 80s legends like Salt-N-Pepa, MC Light, and Queen Latifah still perform on stage at award shows, on television. But they're just a few of the women who shaped hip-hop's inception. In her new book, music journalist Kathy Iandoli tracks women's influence in hip-hop back to 1973. The book is called God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip-Hop. And she joins us now from NPR in New York. Kathy, welcome to 1A.
Thanks, Joshua.
We welcome your questions about the history of women in hip-hop, or if there are some artists that you think have never quite gotten the props they deserve. Tell us who and why. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. So, Kathy, let's set a foundation for this conversation. I'm looking at Billboard.com, and the cover story right now is Lizzo's Truth Hurts tops Hot 100 for seventh week, tying for longest reign ever for a rap song by a female artist. Scroll down, and you can see that of the top six, four of them, have been in the last 5 years. So it seems like female rap, female hip-hop artists are getting attention these days. What gap is your book trying to fill?
Well, I think the reason why there are so many female artists that are now, you know, filling the charts and making this impact in the current landscape over the last 5 years, I think is because of the foundation that Nicki Minaj first laid when she came out on the scene around 2009, 2010. And what this book actually just embodies is explaining the long history of how women, you know, had these moments on the charts and on the radio and doing all of these major things for hip-hop and for popular music in general, but how there were ebbs and flows constantly. And I really wanted to just emphasize all of the hurdles that a lot of the women had to jump over in order to get to this place that we're at right now. And I personally feel like there was no greater example of just how that all went down than when I was putting the book together and realizing there wasn't a single book about women in hip-hop in existence until now.
Did you have an early interest in hip-hop? Was there one artist that kind of turned you on to it?
Yeah, actually. It was around, geez, 1991, 1992, that was probably the time period where I became a hip-hop zealot, and it was all thanks to TLC. I used to try to dress like Left Eye. And
With the eye patch and everything?
Oh, my gosh. So I was...
There's a story. I know there's a story behind this.
You know there's a story. then I was like 12 years old and, you know, Left Eye wore a condom over her glasses. And you remember A Different World, the Dwayne Wayne glasses, right?
The ones with the sunglasses that flipped
that
up over
flip
the regular glasses. Yeah.
Yes. So I had a pair of those. And what I did was, because obviously, I wasn't walking around with Trojans in my back pocket at 12 years old or at 40. But I took an index card and I cut it and I balled up a saran wrap. It was green saran wrap, and I taped it and made a makeshift condom that I stuck to my Dwayne Wayne glasses, and that's what I wore with cross colors, t-shirt, Carl Kanai jeans, and Timberland boots. Prior to that, you know, I was a fan of just what I heard on the radio, but I think that was the moment when I saw TLC that really just changed everything for me.
Was that kind of a weird transition for you? I mean, seeing a female hip-hop artist who, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but who made it relatable, who gave you something to emulate? Like, did that change things for you?
Yeah, I would have to credit Lauryn Hill for that, since we're both from Jersey. Mm-hmm. She was kind of that conduit for me, and that happened a year later in 1993 when the Fugees first came out, and even in 1992 when I saw her in Sister Act 2. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing about what TLC represented, specifically Left Eye, was, you know, we were coming off this consistently steady stream of male artists. I mean, think about it. We're wedged in the NWA era during this time period as well. So for a kid to see that, I wasn't quite sure where I fit in as a fan. And then when I saw TLC, I was like, oh, there I am. So it was during that moment. But I think, you know, as I became more and more of a fan of hip hop, and I saw the female artists, and they were all so unique in their own ways, and they represented so many different things, I think as a woman, as a young girl going into womanhood, I identified with different parts of all of those artists' personalities.
So we go from West Coast, you know, gangster rap with groups like NWA. We then have female hip hop artists who hit the scene and begin to kind of make a name. But your book starts really at the very beginning, and hip hop has its birth in New York. The first line of your book is, quote, "If DJ Kool Herc is the founding father of hip hop, his sister Cindy Campbell is the founding mother," unquote. Tell us about DJ Kool Herc and Cindy's contribution.
So we all know how we begin the story of hip-hop, right? 1520 Sedgwick, where Kool Herc throws this infamous party in the rec room and thus kicking off what we now know to be just the hip-hop culture at large. But really, it was his sister's idea. Cindy wanted to throw a fundraiser to raise enough money so that she can go over to the East Village and buy clothes for school. And she wanted to look cool and everything. So it was her party. And she wanted her brother to DJ. And, you know, their father had a lot of DJ equipment. And what Herc did was he pieced together all of the equipment to make what was called the Herculord. And he became a legend that night. But it really was Cindy who put it all together. And when I learned that, I was like, wow.
Why did she never get credit?
Because after that, it was all about Herc. I mean, you know, it was different back then, right? You look at 2019 hip-hop, right, where even the publicist is famous, right? Everyone who has a part in the story is wearing sunglasses in the club. Cindy didn't have that luxury of, like, you know, I started it and I collected tickets at the door and I did this, that, and the third. That wasn't the thing. So I think, you know, after that, I mean, we're not going to discredit everything that Herc did. But it was his sister's idea. And just to be able to tell the story of how wherever there was a man present doing something amazing for hip hop, there was in fact a woman there too.
Your book begins in the 70s with an artist named Debbie D as a hip hop matriarch. Mercedes Ladies is the first all-female hip hop group. Debbie D was featured on the soundtrack for the movie Beat Street back in 1984. Here's a brief clip of her single, Us Girls Can Boogie Too.
Us girls are the best of friends. If one ain't got no money, the other one lends. When we go out, we know we look real hot. What the boys want, how you know we got? The fly girl Debbie D needs someone who can hold my policy. So, hey fellas, move on close. Take me on a cruise and watch me float.
That's Us Girls Can Boogie 2 from the 1984 film Beat Street. And yes, you are forgiven if you suddenly had to do the Cabbage Patch for no clear reason. Performed by Debbie D. Talk, Kathy, about... I mean, don't tell me you weren't sitting in your seat.
I was like, is there a camera in here? Do you see me?
I was worried that you could see us, frankly. Because I have to maintain my credibility as a respectable NPR news anchor.
Right.
Talk about the influence of women on hip-hop's earliest days. It seems like that sound, that hook that, like, DJ Kool Herc had... even parallel to it, was never without the influence of women as well, or at least the presence of women.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that scene in Beat Street, for those of you listening who have never seen Beat Street, this is one of the opening scenes, and it's just amazing. You know, there it's funny because the DJ is talking about how, you know, oh, I know you're rehearsing for this, you know, just like telling them, come on stage, don't be shy. And it's, you know, Debbie D. Shaw Rock and Lisa Lee, and they just get up there and, oh my gosh, it's amazing. But I think, you know, when you're thinking about this time period, and I do want to say that I felt it was really important to start with the pioneers of hip hop, because they are often pushed to the side for what happened from the early 80s on. And it's wildly unfair, especially with women. There had to be a discussion on Debbie D, on Sha Rock, on Lisa Lee, on the Mercedes Ladies, on The Sequence, which, you know, gave us Angie Stone, Pebbly Poo. There were so many women before we even meet Roxanne Shanté. And their struggle was very different from the women in the 80s, 90s, early aughts, and today. Because they were competing with men, but they're all like 13, 14 years old. And they're showing up to these jams that are now occupied by a bunch of young guys who are trying to replicate what Kool Herc did. And really all they want is for that moment to get on the mic. They just want to be able to show what they can do. And there's no studio time. There's no real rehearsal. There's talking to your mirror and then showing up to the jam. And you had to be that much more amazing than even the male contemporaries, because you're talking about these jams had like 30, 40, 50, 60 people in any given evening. So if one girl is showing up, you know, she had to make that impact. And I think that what all of these, the female pioneers did was they set the stage for the Roxanne Shantés and everyone thereafter. They provided that confidence, that ability to show up in a group of men and say, can I get on the mic?
We're speaking to Kathy Iandoli, the author of the new book, God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip Hop. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Glad to get to some of the artists that you think deserve a little more attention. Rick emailed, I was in New York City, right place, right time. One week there were no kids spinning on cardboard boxes, and the next week there were. Hopefully you'll mention the group JJ Fad and their piece Supersonic. That is going to be in my head, Rick, for the rest of the day. Matthew posted on our Facebook page, with love, of course, with love. Supersonic, I played the death out of that song. Matthew posted on our Facebook page, I will be devastated if Ladybug Mecca doesn't get a huge dose of love. Silky vocals in one of the greatest hip-hop bands of all time, smack dab in the middle of the golden era of this most amazing musical genre. And a few of our listeners weighed in on their favorite female rap artists. Here's what two of them, Richard from North Carolina and Wanda from Ohio, left in our inbox.
MC Light was one of the greatest female hip-hop MCs to me. There are others, but to me, MC Light was one of the greatest.
MC Light is a beautiful artist. She has that hardcore edge to her voice that African-American women are known for being strong. I think her voice and talent and rapping skills are a masterpiece.
Yeah, Richard, Wanda, no argument here. Thank you for mentioning MC Light. She released her first album called Light as a Rock in 1988, but she wrote one of her hit songs, I Crammed to Understand You, Sam, at the age of 12 and recorded it at age 14.
I used to be in love with this guy named Sam. I don't know why, because he had the head like that of a clam. But you couldn't tell me nothing, because Sam was number one. Because to me, oh my gosh, he was one in a million. I should have knew the consequences right from the start, that he'd use me for my money and then break my heart. But like a fool in love, I fell for his game. But
Kathy, tell us about MC Light and if you have any theories about who Sam was.
Oh, man, I have to say that off the air.
We'll talk about that later. All right, we'll talk about Sam later.
Because I crammed to understand who Sam was. I want to answer a couple of those emails. First and foremost, yes, JJ Fad is discussed in the book. And I was really surprised when I learned that they came through Eazy-E. That I think that was pretty a cool thing that I didn't even realize. Ladybug
Eazy-E, one of the members of NWA.
Yes. Right. And Ladybug Mecca is definitely in the book. Shout out to Mecca. She gave me some amazing insight about the early days of Diggable Planets, her group, and how they were, their aesthetic was as jazz musicians, and they tried to put Ladybug Mecca in a cat suit while the other two guys were wearing trousers and hard bottom shoes. So there's some cool anecdotes in there. And yes, and I definitely discuss MC Light. I spoke with Light a few years ago for a publication, and we were on a conference call, right? So when you call in and, you know, you like announce your name, right? I says, the thing chimed and goes, please announce yourself. And I hear Light. It was like, it's like she talks in rap. And it was amazing. When she came on the phone, I was like, that is the coolest way to announce yourself anywhere, anyhow, because every time I try to announce myself, it's like, Kathy, you know, and she just came in and she's like, Light. I was like, wow. And we had a good laugh about that. But MC Light, oh my goodness.
And I do want to note that when we're talking about women in hip hop, we're not just talking about recording artists. We're also talking about publicity, DJing, engineering, management. Like, you're covering more than just who we hear on the record.
Yes. I made women in hip hop who rapped as the focal point, because you're talking about four decades of them not being properly documented. But woven throughout, I do have pieces of information that come from, you know, female journalists and other people. And, you know, I spoke with Spinderella, who speaks from the DJ perspective.
The DJ for Salt and Pepper.
Sweet DJ for Salt and Pepper, yes. I wanted to really include everyone, but it would have been a 3,000-page book, so hopefully the next book will cover more of the rest. And I really wanted to cover international artists, too. I mean, some of my cutting room floor stuff, I was carrying on about Nana Cherry, you know, whose song Buffalo Stance made its way here, and, you know, she is an international artist. And there were so many that I wanted to include.
Ray tweeted, as opposed to today's blingy and lovey-dovey hip-hop, I miss Sister Soulja and that kind of real, gritty, political, and socially conscious rap, i.e. her collaboration with Public Enemy. Are any female rap artists doing such today? We'll get an answer to your question, Ray, as we continue with Kathy Iandoli, the author of God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip-Hop. Plenty of artists are making a resurgence, are making a comeback. Maybe you've seen some of Missy Elliott's latest work. She'll be in the conversation, too, when we come back. Stay close.
People, you know, me and Timberland in house 20 years ago. What the dealio? Now what the drillio? If you wanna battle me, then let me know.
Back now to our conversation with Kathy Iandoli. Her new book is called God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip Hop. Love to get your questions about the genre or your shout outs to your favorite female hip hop artists, maybe even producers or promoters or engineers, any women in hip hop who you feel are unsung. Or maybe if you are a woman working in hip hop, how have the contributions of the artists who came before you influenced you? Comment on our Facebook page, email us 1A@WAMU.org, or tweet us at 1A. Kathy, I'd love you to react to this comment from Sonia, who emailed, I'm glad that attention is finally being paid to the contributions of women in hip hop. However, I've often struggled with qualifying performers like Lauryn Hill and Lizzo as hip-hop artists, as I would call MC Light or Antoinette. Artists like Lauryn and Lizzo have dynamic singing ability, and they integrate hip-hop elements into their music, but they're not, quote-unquote, pure hip-hop artists. In comparison, I think of Bobby Brown, who used rap in several songs, but would never be called a hip-hop artist. Kathy?
Interesting. I would wonder if she qualifies Drake as a hip-hop artist, because Drake does the same thing that Lauryn Hill and Lizzo do. Does she qualify new artist Juice WRLD as a hip-hop artist? Or, a matter of fact, 95% of the male hip-hop artists right now that are out and qualify as rappers and sing, Post Malone is considered a hip-hop artist. And he sings through most of his songs. I think
Lil Nas X sings all of Old Town Road.
There it is.
Like, the entire song is sung.
Entire song. But I think that there's maybe our own subconscious assumption that when a woman is singing, she's a singer. Whereas men are given that versatility. And I think like Bobby Brown on Every Little Step and the Ghostbusters rap, well, those are fun. Yes, he wouldn't be a hip-hop artist.
I was about to say, I heard you smiling as you mentioned the Ghostbusters rap. Like, it's kind of almost
too
impossible.
Too hot to handle, too cold to hold. They're called the Ghostbusters, and they're in control.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yes.
Now, listen, I would put those bars up against some other songs by other artists, but, yeah, I mean, she's absolutely right. No, I would not consider Bobby Brown to be a rapper.
But I do understand where Sonia's coming from, and we've had this conversation on the show, too, in terms of the way that we define musical genres. Lil Nas X is a good example with his song Old Town Road and the argument over whether he was allowed to be on the country charts, even though the remix has Billy Ray Cyrus on it. That led to a whole conversation about who's in this genre and who's out of this genre, the historical right. roots of how the record industry kind of had to separate, you know, blues from country, from rock, from to say this music is for our white audiences and this music is for our black audiences. And the idea that like a Lil Nas X could have a rap song in a cowboy hat and pants with the fringe on it going, I'm gonna take my horse down the old town road, and that would be a rap song. Blows some
really
people's
good.
Well, you know, it's, you know, I practiced, but it blows some people's minds when you think about genre bending. And I think some of the female artists in hip hop have also forced us to rethink who belongs where.
I agree 100%. And I do want to also shout out Queen Latifah for singing on Ladies First, because I think that is probably one of the earliest examples of an artist who was both rapping and singing on a track. But I think what we have to keep in mind is good, bad, or indifferent when it comes to hip-hop at large. It was, in fact, Lauryn Hill who popularized the ability to both sing and rap on one song. And as artists became more willing to showcase both sides of their talents, slowly hip-hop caught on. And, you know, Lauryn, I will say Miss Hill is the reason why we have a Drake doing both. Mm-hmm. And now we have hip hop artists who are singing. But to get on my rap nerd tip for just a second, when we're talking about hip hop, I would label certain artists as lyricists and others as more of musicians. And I consider them both to be hip hop. So I wouldn't necessarily say it has to be one or the other.
Since you mentioned Queen Latifah, we should talk about her for just a minute. All Hail the Queen was released 1 year after MC Light's album. This is the 30th anniversary of that album. Here she is in an interview last year on Live with Kelly and Ryan discussing women in hip hop.
I have a lot of respect for female rappers, and we are such a powerful minority.
Yes.
And I say powerful in the sense that if you hear one female rapper's record come through on the radio, you hear that record, you know that record, you memorize that record. We just stand out.
That's Queen Latifah speaking last year on Live with Kelly and Ryan. It's interesting, Kathy, as we talk about the history of women in hip hop, there's a whole generation that probably kind of knows that Queen Latifah was a rap artist, but may not have really had an encounter with her. They might know her better from seeing her as Big Mama Thornton in Chicago than they would have known hearing her from Ladies First or UNITY or any of her hits.
I know, and it's insane. In fact, when I open my MC Light chapter, I'm at a concert 30 years from when she first arrived, and she's talking to the audience about all of her different side projects, including being the voice of the BET Awards, and saying, no, tonight I'm MC Light. But it is kind of insane to think about that after so many years, there may be someone who isn't aware of that whole past life of just being a trailblazer in hip hop. And, you know, but I think Latifah does a great job of reminding everyone where she came from and what she represents.
She also had one of the more, I think, kind of inflammatory, socially conscious albums with UNITY, because it's one of the first ones that I can remember that had the B word in it, the pejorative for a woman, as in who you call in a B. And it was part of the edit that ran on the radio and kind of forced this conversation, at least where I came up, about the way that men talked about women. So it had this kind of social consciousness to it. That gets back to the question Ray asked. Ray tweeted, "As opposed to today's blingy and lovey-dovey hip-hop, I miss Sister Soulja and that kind of real, gritty, political, and socially conscious rap, i.e. her collaboration with Public Enemy. Are any female rap artists doing such today?" Kathy?
Absolutely. Rhapsody. I mean, 100%, Rhapsody is doing that work. And I think that there are other artists that exist, other female hip-hop artists that are in our periphery that don't receive the proper recognition for what they are doing. But what I would also point to over decades is that none of these artists, with the exception of Rhapsody now, because she's doing really well in the way of popularity, and you know, her album Eve is out and is getting very well received, and she was Grammy nominated previously. But artists like Sister Soulja, or even, you know, Lauryn Hill, artists who were speaking about things, Bahamadia, they didn't always get on the radio for those particular discussions. So that's always been an underlying problem in hip hop, where when you're saying something as a woman, because I think Public Enemy, you know, they received excellent exposure when during their heyday, but you know, even like a Kendrick Lamar today, but when a woman is speaking from this political perspective, a lot of times she's not marketed or promoted as widespread.
It's funny you mentioned Public Enemy, because Public Enemy also had the benefit of Flavor Flav being
absolutely
very telegenic and very kind of outlandish and out there. And just visually, he was one of those artists you kind of couldn't ignore. Another artist, a female artist, who at least to me visually is impossible to ignore, is Missy Elliott. And you devote a lot of time to her in your book. Here is an excerpt of her induction speech at this year's Songwriters Hall of Fame. She is the first female rapper ever to be inducted.
I thank my mother because she was going to have a doctor to see me, because in high school I was writing on the house walls in the floor. And she told everybody in my family, like, something is wrong with her. But we just didn't have, you know, we didn't have the money like that. So I was running out of loose leaf paper. So I just started writing all over the walls a whole bunch of songs. And she was so mad because she thought, you know, when we leave, you don't get that money back.
That was Missy Elliott speaking at this year's Songwriters Hall of Fame. I wonder how you see Missy Elliott's contribution. She performed at this year's MTV Video Music Awards and burned it down. She had this kind of, she did her new single, Throw It Back. She performed some of her older songs. They kind of felt of a piece with one another, like they were part of one canon of this very visually outlandish, almost absurdist work in hip hop, where she was almost a hip hop artist, but if you only heard the song and didn't see the video, you had almost gotten half of it or less.
Oh my gosh, Missy Elliott. Missy's not an artist, she's a movement. my goodness. There's just, the thing about Missy is that, you remember the first time I saw Missy was when she was singing back up on Cold Rock the Party with MC Light, right? But when she came out with The Rain, and she's wearing the big garbage bag and dancing, and then she's sitting on hills like Lorraine, it's a line from the song, in her green jumpsuit, and then just exaggerating parts of her face. There was just something about Missy that was so abstract, yet it was so tangible. And she's managed to carry that through the duration of her career, and I just think that's magnificent. Not a lot of artists, whether male or female, can start so hot and maintain that consistency, even in the absence of new catalog or music, albums, whatever. Even in the absence of all of that, you can still look at them and hear them talk and just see that they haven't lost that spark. And that's the thing about Missy. And when she came back out this year with her project, I was like, wow. She still hasn't missed a beat. It's ridiculous.
She's the only artist I've ever found who actually make a beat from something playing backwards.
Oh my goodness.
And work it where, I mean, I I never thought I would memorize lyrics that are actually backwards, but if I could hear that song and say it's like off the top of mm-hmm. my head until the day that I die. We got a comment from one of our emeritus staff members. Lindsay Foster Thomas, who's now at WUNC in North Carolina, tweeted, "Once I read this amazing Twitter thread about the contributions of female hip-hop dancers, namely Big Les, who you see in classic videos like Mary J. Blige's Real Love. That's also her in Silhouette dancing hard in the intro for the sitcom Living Single. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Before I let you go, we should definitely talk about some of the shifts in the ways that female hip-hop artists are perceived. In the 90s, there was this changing of the guard where you note that there were artists like Lil' Kim and Foxy Brown who approached kind of earning respect a little bit differently. A lot of folks consider the popularity of today's major female hip-hop artists is kind of a resurgence or a renaissance, but one of the points you try to make is that women have been involved since the inception and never disappeared. So are we seeing things like, you know, the way that some female rappers are very sexual in their appearances or performances or very socially conscious that were always there and we just ignored them? Or are we seeing some things that are genuinely new right now, brand new?
I think it might be a combination of both, because I think if we are talking about societally what was going on during these two comparative decades, right? If you're talking about the 90s and you start with like 1992, which was designated the year of the woman, but also was the year where there was the greatest resurgence of sexual assaults. And then you have groups like TLC coming out and speaking about amazing things. When you were mentioning Public Enemy and talking about Flavor Flav, I would consider Left Eye to be the female Flavor Flav, because what she was doing was she was still hyper-political, and it was something that we never really got on a commercial level. I mean, on the first TLC album, Ooh on the TLC Tip, on the song His Story, they talk about the Tawana Brawley rape trial. And, you know, they have this underlying strong message that I do feel, you know, carried into Waterfalls by their next project. But slowly they were pushing Left Eye's rapping away from the forefront as they became more regarded as an R&B group.
Yeah, Waterfalls makes a commentary about the HIV crisis at the time, refers to someone whose three letters took him to his final resting place. One of the first rap songs that I can remember that ever dealt with HIV/AIDS in any kind of direct way.
Yes. And also when Salt-N-Pepa remade Let's Talk About Sex to call it Let's Talk About AIDS, that was another great example of just women speaking about things way ahead of their time. But by the time, you know, Lil' Kim and Foxy Brown arrived, we were at this point where gangster rap had so fully enforced this misogyny onto hip-hop. And what they were doing was they were taking a hold of their own sexuality and their own sex positivity. And now, if we're drawing a parallel from the 90s to today, a lot of these artists who are promoting sex positivity and embracing their own sexuality and body positivity, we're coming through these couple of years with movements like Me Too and Time's Up, where women are speaking up and really just saying we're not going to be shamed any longer. And I really consider these artists to be an offshoot of that.
Before I let you go, Kathy, what's next? Who are some of the household or some of the artists out today that you think are on the rise to becoming household names? Or what's the next movement in hip hop as it relates to female artists before we let you go?
Oh, my gosh. There's so many. I would say Megan Thee Stallion, Rico Nasty, Tierra Wax, City Girls, Cash Doll, Dreezy. I'm missing so many because now I'm on the spot. But these are just a few of the brilliant, brilliant female hip-hop artists that are out there doing so many different things. And, yeah, Snow the Product, check her out as well. There's just so many. And I think what we're doing now is women are here. It's no longer a great female hip-hop artist. It's great hip-hop artists.
Kathy Iandoli is a journalist who chronicles some of those great artists in her new book, God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip-Hop. Kathy, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
And hey, listen, if there are artists that you are thinking of that should get more attention, tweet us. Tell us about them, at 1A. This conversation was produced by Stacia Brown. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.
Next minute calling for the law. This 9 have them calling for the law. They ain't getting money, so they bored. I can never lose. What you thought? And they got it all locked, man, of course. They say I got the juice, I got the sauce. These haters on my body, shake them all.